left, right and centre. He promised the earth, he promised this ready cooked deal, and he's just not delivered in any shape or form. It's dreadful. But on the other hand, we can't be blackmailed by Europe.
Preventing a deal is a row over Britain's fisheries. After January 1st, Europe won't have automatic access to British waters anymore, and a no deal will mean zero access. The French are particularly upset about this. Clashes in the English Channel are likely, and the UK has already bolstered its defences there with four Royal Navy ships. The EU is calling for calm, though.
Grande-Bretagne et l'Europe sont des...
Great Britain and Europe are friends, partners, allies, and this will remain the case after Brexit.
The EU's Brexit negotiator is also calling for patience, saying a new trade pact with Britain is still possible this week.
Ça fait à peine 9 mois que nous négocions.
Trade of goods and services, fishing, energy, transport, security of citizens. Never have we negotiated such an agreement in such a short space of time. We've only been negotiating for 9 months.
The EU says that Westminster has to compromise on fisheries, but the UK says it cannot be the only country in the world that does not have sovereign control over its fishing waters. Neither seem prepared to budge, and despite a new deadline, it seems a no-deal Brexit is more and more likely. Bianca Rahimi, London.
The US-backed opposition leader Juan Guaidó has once again tried to cause instability in the country by staging a protest vote. Guaidó launched a so-called popular consultation vote, asking people to dismiss the legitimacy of the parliamentary elections and the presidency of Nicolás Maduro. The elections, which was boycotted by the opposition, saw the ruling Socialist Party winning more than two-thirds of the seats. Although Guaidó said millions of people took part in the event, very few people were seen attending the consultation polling stations. Government officials rejected Guaidó's consultation vote, saying he has no political leadership to lead such an event.
Guaidó's popularity is tumbling down, and every day he has fewer supporters. He no longer represents the country's opposition.
Nonetheless, a few still stand by Guaidó and his political role.
As long as Guaidó has the support of the US, he will be a political leader and his voice will be heard.
But analysts say Guaidó's links with the US are not enough to make him a successful leader, as many have abandoned him in Venezuela.
Opposition members who ran in the past legislative elections broke ties with Guaidó due to his anti-electoral stance. His popularity is quickly melting down.
Opposition figure Juan Guaidó, the guy who the U.S. still calls interim president of Venezuela, seems to be left alone by most of his former allies and followers, as fewer and fewer people respond to the events he calls on in his own country. Jesus Silva, Caracas.
The United States doesn't elect their leader by a popular vote, but by an electoral college. And that group has just chosen Democrat Joe Biden to be the president-elect of the United States. Biden was selected amid bitter, unfinished, but as yet unproven accusations of massive electoral fraud. Polls consistently show that around 35% of the country believes Biden won due to voter fraud, and the challenges to the nation's electoral integrity seem certain to continue until January 6th, when Congress officially counts the electoral votes.
Trump is going to just keep going on doing what he does, and that's not to the benefit of the country, but obviously we're just moving along, following the rules, and hopefully the democracy is strong enough to keep going.
President Biden is going to be in office. This it's time for a change. He's gone. Good. Goodbye.
It now seems unlikely that incumbent Donald Trump can reverse Biden's projected win, and many wonder if Republicans in this gun-filled nation will take to the streets in protest. For months, domestic media stoked fears that a lot of right-wing violence will occur should Trump lose.
A lot, no. Could there be isolated incidents? Sure, but you know, America is full of over 330 million people, and I would say that 99.999% of them will not do anything violent. They don't want to attack their neighbors, no matter what their neighbors' political thoughts are or how they voted.
However, it's hard to predict what will occur after such virulent accusations of fraud and the long-term demonization of Trump supporters, who did prevail at every election level except the presidential. Protests at Electoral College meeting places were held in multiple states, and the Michigan State Capitol was closed because local police said credible threats of violence had been made. A majority of Democrats never accepted Trump's win as legitimate, and now it seems that a majority of Republicans are opposed to the Electoral College's election of Biden. That makes for a worrying pattern, but the main concern right now is, will there be significant election-related violence? Ramin Mazahari, Chicago.
Angry reactions continue to pour in against the recent normalization of ties between Morocco and Israel. This time, Palestinian Legislative Council in the Gaza Strip held a press conference to condemn the deal that came at the expense of the Palestinian cause.
Normalization is not a normal. It's a misleading term. It is a misleading term. It is a false term. There is no normalization with the occupation in the history. Every country suffered from occupation, tried by all means to defend themselves, even by armed struggle, in order to liberate their land. For this reason, we are refusing normalization of any country, especially a country like Morocco.
Morocco is the fourth state to make such an agreement with Israeli regime since August, despite the Moroccan people's refusal of the deal that has also been struck recently with the United Arab Emirates, Bahrain, and Sudan. The Moroccan king claimed he agreed to start the relations with Israel to expand economic and cultural cooperation and advance regional stability and peace.
These deals can never bring peace for Israel. The current crisis will never come to an end until the last Zionist leaves our land. The normalization deals only embolden Israel to commit more crimes.
Palestinians call on the Arab nations to dismiss these normalization deals and protest against their leaders' decisions that Palestinians consider a stab in the back of the Palestinian cause.
Israeli regime should be put on trial for its crimes and violations of Palestinian rights in the International Criminal Court. The Arab nations should voice their anger at the normalization deals.
U.S. used Morocco's Western Sahara claim as a bargaining chip in talks with Morocco to secure the deal and agreed to recognize Rabat's sovereignty over the territory.
While the fourth Arab country has started normalizing ties with the Israeli regime, Palestinians here stress that no deal can bring peace to their occupied territories. They say that resistance is the only way to defend the Palestinian rights. Ruba Shabet, Gaza.
The recitation of a poem by Turkish President Recep Tayyip Erdogan during a military parade in Azerbaijan Republic was strongly condemned by the Iranian lawmakers and the government officials. Right after his statements, which Iran believes may fan separatism among Azeri minority, Tehran summoned the Turkish envoy. Foreign Minister Mohammad Javad Zarif, in a tweet, rejected the remarks, saying that no one can talk about Iran's, quote, beloved Azerbaijan. Although the Turkish foreign minister has given assurances in a phone call with Foreign Minister Mohammad Javad Zarif that Ankara respects the Islamic Republic's sovereignty and territorial integrity, the members of the parliament vehemently slammed such remarks.
In whatever way, direct or indirect, in form of a poem or any other form, such interventionist remarks are vehemently rejected by Iran. We call on the friendly state of Turkey to be watchful about their official statements, which may result in controversy. we respect the territorial integrity of the Azerbaijan Republic and Turkey and expect them to do the same.
The poem recited by Erdogan is ethnically sensitive. A president must know the repercussions of his rhetoric. This was a wrong move by the Turkish president.
Such assertions have always been strongly rejected by the Iranian officials and nation. No one is allowed to talk about Iran's territorial integrity.
Erdogan's statements come as his efforts to join the EU have been futile, and the Europeans impose more and more sanctions on Ankara under different pretexts.
Earlier, the Iranian lawmakers issued a statement condemning the remarks by the Turkish President Recep Tayyip Erdogan, saying that such remarks may put the security of the region at risk. Human Abedi, Tehran.
The presidency of Donald Trump has been full of controversy in many cases due to the lawsuits and investigations of a judicial nature that he faces. However, the president has so far managed to avoid them thanks to his position and to the defense provided in some cases by the Department of Justice. This shield has an expiration date, January 20, 2021, when a new president will be inaugurated. From then on, Trump will have to face, as any other citizen, the cases that have been accumulating during these years in the courts.
I think, though, that not only has there have been concerns about what Donald Trump has done before his presidency, I wouldn't be surprised if what he will do after his presidency as well. And so the types of potential criminal allegations that have been brought against him as well as his associates they have quite compelling evidence. And I think that it will be hard prosecutors will be hard pressed to ignore that evidence.
The best case scenario for Trump is there are no lawsuits or they're just frivolous and dismissed by the courts. The worst case is that they're going to have something really serious against him where he could possibly even face prison time. This is hypothetical right now. We don't have a real case of that, but there are people digging into it.
Civil cases weigh him. And investigations that could have criminal implications. At the center of the investigations are his taxes, the management of his business, the use of the presidency to benefit his interests, and the defamation complaints of women who accuse him of sexual abuse, which he has denied.
It is very possible that Donald Trump will try to pardon himself. We will be in completely new territory because, again, no president has tried this before. So the courts have never decided if it's legal or not.
Some U.S. media outlets are reporting about Mr. Trump has been asking aid since 2017 if he can self-pardon preemptively, especially on tax fraud accusations. So far, his attorneys have used the immunity argument granted by the presidency. But when he leaves the White House, they will have to reconsider his defense strategy. Reporting from Miami, Ronnie Carvello.
After the controversial law on global security and the massive protest against it, the French government has approved another controversial bill, this time called Law on Separatism, provoking again a popular protest. Prime Minister Castex openly said that this bill targets what he called radical Islam, enemy of the Republic. President Emmanuel Macron has promoted the bill to target separatists undermining the nation.
I have the impression that Islamophobia is an important electoral trading issue. I don't think that Marine Le Pen will win the elections, but to prevent that, the actual government is playing on the ground of the far right.
A rarely seen police cordon surrounded the demonstration entirely from the beginning till the end. Every 100 meters, the police charged the demonstration and made arrests. Some were wounded. Macron had said that the presumed radical black bloc has to be destroyed. Therefore, the police had clear orders, zero tolerance. However, this time, the violence did not come from the demonstrators. Human rights groups have raised concerns over the law, saying it would discriminate and stigmatize French Muslims.
There's so much ambiguity in the formulation of the bill that anyone can be accused of anything anytime. The head of police can't dissolve any association on any grounds. With this law, justice does not exist anymore. The democratic state does not exist anymore. Anyone who is a bit annoyed by Muslims can use this law in an arbitrary way. It has to be abolished, same as the law on global security.
The bill in question requires that everyone strictly respects the French Republican principles of secularism, whatever that might mean. The funding of Muslim associations and mosques will be closely monitored. The main association in defense of Muslims, the CCIF, was dissolved. All organizations will have to sign a declaration on secularism if they want to receive funds from the state. In case of non-compliance, they would have to refund the money.
The new bill will be discussed in the French Parliament. Members of the majority party already declared that they want to modify the text. Some want to soften it, others want to make it even more restrictive. Chris Den Hunt, Paris.
In a move lauded by Austria's Muslim community, the National Constitutional Court has officially lifted the ban on headscarves at elementary schools. The controversial ban, approved last year by the previous conservative right-wing coalition government, has now been ruled unconstitutional. The court's president says it singles out the religion of Islam unjustifiably, goes against the religious and ideological neutrality of the state, and violates the principle of equality.
The selective ban could have an adverse effect on the inclusion of students and lead to discrimination. It excludes Islamic origin and tradition and carries the risk of making it difficult for Muslim girls to access education and could marginalize them from society.
Austria's Islamic faith community, which had filed a complaint about the ban in January, welcomed the ruling, saying it would end a populist prohibition policy.
We are against constraints and prohibitions because, as it is said in the Holy Quran, there is no compulsion in the matter of faith. Our trust in the rule of law and our patience have paid off.
The ban prevented girls up to the age of 10 from wearing headscarves in school.
I think this is a big step forward because schoolgirls are often discriminated because of their hijab, and with this new rule, they should be able to live it out freely and without any discrimination, even if it's by other school students or teachers. So I think it's kind of a part of a revolution.
While the opposition Social Democrats, the Liberals and the Greens all welcomed the decision, members of the Conservative ruling party called it regrettable, and the right-wing Freedom Party even suggested attempts to reinstate it. The ban's proponents argued they were protecting young girls from being pressured into observing the hijab.
But Muslim families deny this allegation, saying using force against girls who choose to wear the headscarf undermines efforts to give them equal opportunities and self-determination. And this time, they've won the argument. Homar Ezgi, Vienna.
Meeting top Afghan officials to finalize the joint comprehensive strategic document between Iran and Afghanistan was the major reason behind the visit of Iranian Deputy Foreign Minister Syed Abbas Araghchi to the Afghan capital Kabul. Analysts say the move will further boost the ties between Iran and Afghanistan.
The visit of Iran's deputy foreign minister to Kabul was fruitful for both sides. Both sides have agreed to finalize the joint comprehensive and strategic document between Iran and Afghanistan. This is a win-win deal, helping Kabul and Tehran boost their ties.
In an exclusive interview with Press TV, the Iranian official stressed the importance of expansion of ties between Kabul and Tehran through numerous ways, including increase of strategic partnership in different fields. He also stressed that bringing peace and political stability to Afghanistan under an Afghan-owned process is one of priorities of Tehran's regional policy.
We would remain backing Iraqi Afghan government and people in their fight for their for peace and stability and prosperity. We do consider peace and security in Afghanistan as our own peace and security, and we do consider the prosperity of Afghan people as the prosperity of Iranians. So we are certainly after a good, constructive, mutually beneficial relations with Afghanistan.
The visit of Iran's deputy foreign minister to Kabul comes as both countries, Iran and Afghanistan, have recently inaugurated the first joint railway project connecting western Afghanistan to eastern Iran as a proof of growing cooperation between both countries. Mutual ties between Kabul and Tehran are expanding as both sides are fighting U.S.-sponsored terrorism and sanctions. But the two countries, observers say, have proved that they will never set back against enemies. Sayed Amin Alemi, Kabul.
To discuss Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam in the light of the month that we are in, who gave everything for humanity.
For humanity.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Welcome to our program For Humanity. Here at IRIB English Radio, I'm your host, Shiraz Agha. Thank you for joining us here today. As you know, this program is concerned with rights in general. However, in these nights and days of Muharram, we are going to be speaking about human rights and how they're connected to the movement of Imam Hussein alayhi salam. Specifically, we're going to be speaking about three very basic human rights and how they are connected to the movement of Imam Hussein. In some of our previous sessions, we talked about one of these rights, which was the right to live, the right to life, both intellectual life, spiritual life, physical life. In the forthcoming sessions, we're going to be speaking about two other types of rights, the right to be free, the right to freedom, and the right to dignity, the right to be dignified, the right to possess dignity, or which we call in Arabic, karamat. By way of an introduction, we said that freedom, which is the lack of constraints by any foreign power, can be divided into various categories. For example, there's political freedom, which can be manifested in different ways. For example, the freedom of the people to elect representatives for themselves, or even to elect their leader, their own leader. There's intellectual freedom, right? The freedom to think in a certain way, to come to conclusions, rational conclusions about truth and reality. There is spiritual freedom, which is, we said, is the freedom from the constraints of the passions, ethical freedom, freedom from moral maladies. And then there's also spiritual freedom, the freedom from the constraints of the self, right? The freedom that we get when we connect to God and become proximate to God, who is, obviously, God is the most free of beings in this universe, and nothing constrains him. When we connect to him and establish a relationship with him, we enjoy in a secondary manner that freedom that he has. These are the different types of freedoms that we said exist. We also said that in the time of Imam Hussein, in his era, a lot of these freedoms had been negated from the people. Of course, we are of the opinion that a lot of these freedoms don't exist in Islam. Like, for example, human beings, we don't believe in an absolute form of democracy, where, for example, a human being has the right and the freedom to choose his own leader. No, God is the being who solely has the right and freedom to appoint a leader over us. Right? So this... which comes in the form of the prophets and the imams, alayhi wasalam. Nevertheless, there is certain freedoms that human beings enjoy within religion, and religion has allowed us to enjoy these freedoms. Like, for example, every woman has the right to choose her husband. Right? Nobody can force her into marriage. But if somebody does, the marriage, in the eyes of religion, is invalid. For example, there's a famous verse in the Holy Quran which says that, which says, for example, لا إكراه في الدين. There's no compulsion in religion. Religion has to be chosen. It can't be something which is forced, it's impossible for religion to be forced upon somebody. It's something that has to be chosen freely. In fact, freedom is one of those things, the freedom to choose religion, which can be manifested in various ways. Like, for example, the freedom to pray. Any praying freely, voluntarily, out of one's own choice, is what gives value to religion and these acts of religion, and these religious acts. If somebody performs it under certain constraints, the value of the act is negated from it. Otherwise, there is no difference between us and angels. For example, we have traditions, and there's verses in the Holy Quran which say the angels also worship God. There's angels. All angels worship God. However, they don't possess, because this worship doesn't stem from this freedom that the freedom that human beings have, it doesn't have the same value that it does when a human being does. Right? Human beings, because they possess various faculties within them, the faculties of the lower faculties, such as the faculties of sensation, the faculties of lust, passion, anger, and stuff like this, when they choose to worship God and they deny the dictates of their lower faculties, and they choose to worship God in this free manner, not through not being compelled, right, by this lack of these lower faculties, such as the angels do, it gives value to their acts of worship and their choices, their religious choices.
Wailing of the young, of the old, of the weak, echoed round the camp of Hashim. Attempts of Hussein, of Zainab, of Qasim, could do nothing to fill their thirst.
However, this freedom, we see that it was negated in the time of Imam Hussein, and this is why he stood up and he rose up, and his movement, one of the purposes of his movement was to give back this freedom to the people. Which is why on the day of Ashura, when Imam Hussein alayhi salam stood in front of his enemies, and he said, if you don't have religion, if you're not religious people, if you're not Muslims, then at least be free men in this world. Be free men. Do not allow yourself to be ruled and be slaves of what these Umayyads, these tyrants and these oppressors are forcing you to do. Waylakum in lam yakun lakum dinun fakunu ahraran fi dunya. Muhammad alayhi salam said, if you're not religious people, woe to you if you're not religious people, and you don't believe that religiously it's wrong to kill me and slaughter my family and oppress us, then at least be free men in this world. Do not be slaves of your passions. Do not be slaves of wealth and money. Do not be slaves of these tyrants who are forcing you to do and to perform this task and this unbecoming task. So freedom is one of those things that was important, and one of the purposes of the revolution of Imam Hussein, and this is one of the reasons why he stood up. And thank you for joining us here on our program for humanity. We were looking at freedom, the basic right of freedom, and how it ties up with the movement of Imam Hussein alayhi salam. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Hope you have instilled in our heart, in a world where hopes disappear. Peace you have ingrained in our soul, in a time when peace becomes rare. Every breath that you did take, every step that you would make, purpose and guidance it gave mankind's heart it awaked. Many people did leave the first teachings received. Hussein planned to retrieve loss of faith he perceived. Many people did leave the first teachings received. Hussein planned
plan to retrieve loss of faith he perceived. Guide, you would be in place of Rasul to restore the sacred ring.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
In the limelight.
Joe Biden delivered a sharp repudiation of Donald Trump and declared that the will of the people had prevailed in a speech that came shortly after the Electoral College officially confirmed his election victory. It was time to turn the page on a presidential election that tested the resilience of American democracy, the president-elect said just moments after Hawaii cast the final four Electoral College votes, clearing a milestone that all but ended Donald Trump's unprecedented attempt to overturn the election results. The article you're about to hear has been written by The Guardian journalist Lauren Gambino. The piece is titled Biden Hails Democracy and Rebukes Trump After Electoral College Victory. Stay with us for more of Lauren Gambino's article. Joe Biden delivered a sharp repudiation of Donald Trump and declared that the will of the people had prevailed in a speech that came shortly after the Electoral College officially confirmed his election victory on Monday, 14th of December. It was time to turn the page on a presidential election that tested the resilience of American democracy, the president-elect said, just moments after Hawaii cast the final four Electoral College votes, clearing a milestone that all but ended Donald Trump's unprecedented attempt to overturn the election results. Biden hailed the presidential election and its uncharted aftermath as a triumph of American democracy and one of the most amazing demonstrations of civic duty we've ever seen in our country. The final vote tally, 306 to 232 electoral votes, followed a baseless campaign by President Trump to reverse the results of an election that saw historic turnout despite the coronavirus pandemic. Trump lost not only in the Electoral College, but he also lost in the popular vote by nearly 7 million. Yet for weeks, the president has clung to meritless accusations of voter fraud in a slate of battleground states that delivered the victory to Biden. His refusal to concede has sowed doubt among his supporters, but the integrity of the vote and undermined faith in the institutions of American governance. In a speech delivered from Wilmington, Delaware, Joe Biden said, "Our democracy, pushed, tested, and threatened, proved to be resilient, true, and strong." Biden, who will become the 46th President of the United States when he's sworn into office on 20th of January, said, "We the people voted. The integrity of our election remains intact. And so now is the time to turn the page, as we've done throughout our history, to unite, to heal." Since Biden entered the presidential race last year, he has cast the election as a battle for the soul of the nation. In his remarks on Monday night, Joe Biden described his Electoral College victory as a fulfillment of that mission and a rejection of Donald Trump. The president-elect called Trump's assault on the democratic process unconscionable and assailed Republicans who embraced his unsubstantiated claims about widespread voter fraud. He singled out the 17 state attorney generals and 126 members of Congress who he said helped legitimize a legal effort to throw out tens of millions of votes in Wisconsin, Michigan, Pennsylvania, and Georgia, and hand the presidency to a candidate who lost the Electoral College, lost the popular vote, and lost each and every one of the states whose votes they were trying to reverse. The U.S. Supreme Court rejected the lawsuit. "These officials," Biden said, "adopted a position so extreme that we've never seen it before, a position that refused to respect the will of the people, refused to respect the rule of the law, and refused to honor our Constitution." Anticipating further resistance from Donald Trump and his allies, Joe Biden noted that the president and his campaign were denied no course of action, and stressed that their efforts failed in states with Republican governors and in courts with Republican-appointed judges. "They were heard," he said, "and they were found to be without merit." Meanwhile, President Trump has continued to dispute the legitimacy of the election on Monday, 14th of December, claiming that the result was rigged due to massive fraud. Twitter moved quickly to label the pronouncements by Donald Trump as disputed. As California's 55 electors cast their ballots for Joe Biden, pushing him over the 270-vote threshold to win the White House, Donald Trump announced on Twitter that his Attorney General, Bill Barr, was resigning, effective from 23rd of December. Trump had recently lost patience with William Barr, viewed as a loyalist who eagerly advanced the president's political agenda, after the attorney general acknowledged that his department had found no evidence of widespread voter fraud. In a sign that Republicans were increasingly prepared to accept reality, some senators and members of Congress acknowledged the Electoral College vote. "The orderly transfer of power is a hallmark of our democracy, and although I supported President Trump, the Electoral College vote today makes clear that Joe Biden is now president-elect," the Republican Senator Rob Portman of Ohio said in a statement. Joe Biden thanked the handful of Republican senators who have accepted the Electoral College vote after resisting his victory for weeks. Ever hopeful that 4 years of deep partisan division will yield a new era of bipartisanship, Biden said he was convinced we can work together for the good of the nation. With the election all but finalized, Joe Biden called on elected officials to turn to the urgent work of combating the coronavirus pandemic. On Monday, the U.S. death toll surpassed more than 300,000, a grisly reminder on the same day Americans began receiving the first shots of a vaccine against the virus. Though the path forward remains challenging, exacerbated by the divisions that persist, Joe Biden said the Electoral College vote should serve as a sign of hope for the nation. He pointed to the election officials, many of whom were volunteers, who carried out their duties in the face of the political pressure, threats of violence, and in some cases, an intervention from the president himself. Their unwavering commitment to the electoral process ensured that the flame of democracy was not extinguished, he said. Biden continued, "They showed a deep and unwavering faith in and a commitment to the law. They knew the elections they oversaw were honest and free and fair. They saw it with their own eyes, and they wouldn't be bullied into saying anything different."
I'm a teacher.
I'm a researcher.
I'm a mother.
I'm a lawyer.
And I believe in acting kindly toward you, because you are
A Muslim lady.
You are very special. There's no one just like you.
From Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran.
You are very special. And I'm so glad you're mine.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. This is Muslim Lady from IRIB English Radio, and our info is based on tradition. Today, we're going to continue the discussion on modesty. And we have in our studio Sister Salma Khalfan, who is in fact my aunt. Welcome to the program. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
Alaykum salam wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Thank you so much for inviting me over. Inshallah, we will have a nice discussion about women, get to know each other better also in Inshallah. The process.
Inshallah. Thank you so much. So we have been discussing on the moral etiquettes in married life to bring a tranquil home. And in our previous sessions, we talked about, you know, small things that in reality, you know, are very important, like being thankful, being content. So today we are going to continue on contentment, I think, you know, showing
we are
comfort.
Going to, yeah, because one of the ways to show contentment is to be a comfort to your husband.
Okay.
Right?
Yeah.
So I would like to elaborate more on that because we have a couple of hadiths on this regard.
Okay.
So before that, like, you know, I would like to just imagine a house when the husband comes home and how you can show this comfort.
Okay, so you're bringing a scenario.
Yeah, like scholars have mentioned this in their books, like Ayatollah Ibrahim Amini has got a very good book on moral responsibilities and etiquette between a husband and a wife.
Yeah.
And I would advise my audience to read this book, you know, time and again, that these are the things. And he's brought many examples of people, you know, of even like outside Islam and court cases. Such things, and some funny stories also, and some real incidents also. Such a storytelling is real incidents.
Definitely
and
worth reading.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. There are two books of his online.
Mm.
I would advise my audience to read that. So here I would say that being a comfort to your husband is to be cordial and warm when he first returns home after working. And have refreshments for him, that, you know, he feels that you're at his disposal.
Yeah.
You know, that would you like tea? Would you like a cup of water? Would you like, coffee?
Mm.
Or would you like to eat? If not, okay, maybe he's just sitting. But at least you've offered that to him. That's like...
you show that concern.
Yeah,
that
the concern. So that he feels, yeah, it's really a comfort for me at home.
That I've been... Somebody was waiting for me to come home.
But try not to overwhelm him like when he comes, like criticizing him when you see him, criticizing of what took place at home or how you know, tired you are and grumpy you are. No, don't make him feel, oh, you don't know how much I suffered today. This happened, that happened. No, first, at least your first word would be that, would you like to have a glass of water or something like that?
Or the dinner is ready. Start with a smile.
Yeah, start with a smile. Greet him. Yeah. Tell him I missed you and things like that. Let him rest and recover his strength before putting up the demands of the personal issues that you encountered during the home. So when he comes home, the way you said, warmly greet him. And then be a good listener, what he has to say.
Mm.
That would be very good, like to listen to him, what he has to say. If he doesn't have anything to say, be quiet and just enjoy the silence.
Okay.
Maybe he doesn't feel like talking.
Yeah.
So this is like giving comfort, the real comfort.
Or asking him, do you want me to talk?
Maybe that could be like, yeah, if he has a good rapport with you, some men don't like talking or they have their moods. But if you know that my husband is so close to me that I can talk to him, anything I want to, then you can say, okay, I would like to tell you some stories. Wouldn't you like to hear?
Exactly.
Then if you would, then well and good, that's the best rapport that a wife and husband could have, I guess. So attend to his needs, understand his fatigue, his tiredness. Understand. Ask him, would you like to change your clothes? Bring him a set of clothes to change. Or even take out his socks if he feels. It would be a very good gesture. You know, I know my grandma used to take out my grandpa's socks.
Socks, yeah.
And he used to feel so good about it.
Yeah.
And I know then my mom even took out the socks of my father. And they didn't have a relationship that he always instructed things on her. But my mother enjoyed doing it for him. Because he was so tired that he didn't even feel like mending. Because he had been working the whole day.
Yeah.
So why not just take out his socks?
Or give him a small massage.
Yeah, exactly. So give encouraging and supportive remarks if he looks worried.
Uh-huh.
You know, one can say, for example, these problems that you're facing, maybe many people are facing.
Mm.
It's not you alone. I understand, So with a strong willpower and patience, it's possible to overcome these difficulties, as long as you don't let the problems get the better of you. Trust in Allah.
Yeah.
Allah is there to solve the problems. Don't be worried. There's something looks like it's worrying you. Maybe even doesn't feel like talking. But you as a wife can comfort him.
Yeah.
We are talking about comfort.
Sometimes they don't want to listen to, for example, you know the answers or you know more. Sometimes they just want to feel like, there is somebody who is there for me. I guess we have to try it. Like, for example, I think for women, when we say things, we don't want solutions straight away. We rather want them to, say, yeah, we understand.
Yeah, exactly.
But they feel like, we have to give some solutions. And we don't want that at that time. So
yeah, exactly. They even wouldn't like that.
Yeah.
So I guess you can just say that I understand. You must feel very tired. Yeah. Maybe something must have happened to make you feel, so low. But don't worry, Allah is there. And don't think you're the only one facing these problems.
Exactly.
Many. And Allah is Allah kulli shayin qadir.
Yeah.
He will solve. And we'll pray for you if there's something worrying you. And mostly, maybe sometimes it's not like that even. Maybe he comes in a very good mood that day. So it's a very big plus point for a wife, right?
Yeah.
To cheer him up more and to get into the routine better. You can share the duties with him along, especially if you have children and everything. So a wife can be a comfort by encouraging him and reminding him that Allah is there to, for example, listen to us and, not to despair and things like that. And there's a tradition of Imam Ja'far Sadiq alayhi salam, who stated that there's nothing better in the world than a good wife. And a good wife is the one whose husband becomes glad upon seeing her.
Mm.
So when he comes home and a wife is all these things, so it's that tradition that Imam Ja'far Sadiq alayhi salam says there's nothing better for a man than a good wife. Then he feels that this is the best thing I have.
And he's waiting to go home to feel like,
And a woman even likes this if a man feels like that, right?
Her,
for the wife. But sometimes women spoil it for themselves. Unfortunately. So this is the tradition, which is the haqiqat, the reality that the imams have told us, that if a woman would like to enjoy that kind of a relationship, than me a comfort for you, husband, such that when he comes home, he feels that, you know, I'm so happy to see this woman,
yeah.
Like Imam Ali towards Hazrat Fatima Zahra.
Please send any suggestion, any idea to our email, that is englishradio@irib.ir.
In a tradition, Imam Ridha alayhi salam has also stated that they are a group of women who raise many children. They are kind and sympathetic. They support their husbands in times of difficulty and in the affairs of this world and the next. These women do not commit any acts which would incur a loss upon their husbands nor multiply their difficulties.
Wow.
Yeah, these are the, I think, the tradition after that does not say this much. It was just this much that I got. Maybe these are the women.
The qualities that are very, you know.
They are outstanding. In the ideal women, right?
Yeah.
So they even they help their husbands in the hereafter as well. That's a beautiful thing, that by bringing up their children in the right way, Islamic way, right? Doing a favor, taking their duties and responsibilities that they should also, because fathers also should, you know, play this role of theirs, right?
Definitely.
But probably they don't have time, so the mother fills the gap.
Yeah,
okay?
It's true.
So these are the women who are, I guess, ideal, and they would never make a man face a loss in this world and the hereafter. We pray to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala that we can even take a drop from the ocean. The barakat are so many, you know, of what the Aimmah have told us, and how to behave as a woman of Islam, and how to go along in, you know, becoming more and more perfect as time goes by, inshallah.
Inshallah, definitely. And I guess if we want to become women like this, we should know that we shouldn't expect that it's going to be very easy, but it's not even very hard. It's the niyat that we, you know, stay, like we say, okay, we're going to do this and, you know, take the effort, and we'll see the fruits that it will bear.
And also, like, keep on reprimanding yourself, doing tazkiyah nafs, keep on scolding yourself that this was not right, compensating for what wrong you did. It's never too late, yeah?
Giving yourself that push to,
yeah,
you know, do
yeah.
it. Sometimes we want to do good, but we don't have that push, that drive to do it. So
yeah.
we should try and find those drives. For example, hearing this radio, this talk show, I at once feel, I myself feel the drive of, you know, doing more. Or feel like, okay, you know, I felt like I was doing a lot. Maybe I wasn't doing that much. And if we want to do things for the sake of Allah, we should know that
It never stops. And also, it's never too late. Sometimes a woman feels that, I've done enough now, like, you know, like wrong.
Yeah, now it's too late for me.
Now
to
it's too late.
Things.
But if today, just imagine if her husband used to come home and the wife used to never offer him some things, or she used to complain. Instead of that, she used to say, would you like a glass of water? Is it like a man would be shocked? No. He would probably feel, oh, that's good. Okay, I like that attitude, right? Give me a glass of water, why not? So it comes slowly and slowly. Wouldn't it be very strange also?
Yeah.
It wouldn't be like something, a creature from the other planet said something that was like shocking, or he was flabbergasted. No, a husband and a wife relationship is so close that he would say, okay, alhamdulillah, she has changed. It's good.
Yeah.
I like a glass of water. And then if she wouldn't complain, slowly and slowly it would set in his mind that, yeah, I've got a good wife.
And
she's
he would
got
appreciate
very good qualities.
It.
Yeah, he would appreciate it more and know her worth more. So it's never too late.
Mm.
And always a wife can regret, and can, even if you have done a lot, you can do better. And this would even give her tranquility, and also the husband, and Allah would bless them more and more and make them the perfect humans, inshallah.
Inshallah. So one of the things you said about contentment is, I remember the story of Sheikh Chamran and his wife, who was very, you know, from a rich family, very elite, very, you know, beautiful. And he was a bit old, and he was a genius. But how she admired his good qualities, and then they got married, and how she was content with so less. It's like from that family to this family, where she got so much in her own family, and now when she's with her husband, She was so content. She was so happy. How did it happen? It's like when you work together, when you yourself realize what is really important for me. Is having so much wealth and having so much comfort the most important? Or having a spouse who loves you, will take care of you, is going to be with you at all times, who is, you know, going to be that, you know, that that person is going to be behind you all the time. I think when she realized this is what she really wants and this is her, you know, ideal and her goal in life, it's what made her content, thankful, and all of these qualities.
Yeah. I guess even it goes back to spouse selection.
Yeah.
The spouse you select, well, would, if he would give you that utmost love, then you wouldn't need anything material to fill the gap.
Definitely.
So it's the love that should be built very strong, a foundation in the family, so as to not go wayward to look after things that would probably be like a painkiller for a woman.
Yeah.
So these things are just something that don't fit the puzzle of a woman's heart. It's like the heart of the woman is just the remembrance of Allah. And that is comes with the love of the family, unity between the husband and wife.
Yeah,
and this is done, the contentment comes about automatically.
Definitely. And also, like, I think it goes in all ways. So, for example, here, if you're content, if you, like, you know, with your husband. Same way a child, if he's given that much attention and everything from his parents, he's not going to look for it outside. And same way, even us with Allah, if we are content with all that Allah is giving us, you know, we're not... whatever he gives or whatever he has, and like we said, we want to strive for, you know, we have this need of wanting more and more. As long as we have Allah, we'll not feel like we need anything else.
Yeah.
So it's like an all-rounder, you know,
being content. It would even make our instinct to want more and more of Allah.
Definitely.
Right? Like his nearness.
Yeah.
Going far away from the world and getting closer to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. So as you have contentment, you feel like now you want the real things that matter.
Yeah.
For perfection, knowledge, definitely, love of Allah, taqwa, and all these things.
Definitely. I'm sure we all benefited a lot, and we hope to see you in our next program.
Inshallah.
And thank you, listeners, for listening. Fi amanillah.
Who is the lover?
Allah.
Who is Ar-Rahman?
Allah.
Who is Al-Mannan?
La ilaha illallah. Muhammad Rasulullah, Muhammad is the messenger, Allah is our return.
The Quran, given by God to Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him and his family, more than 1400 years ago, as guidance for humanity.
La ilaha illallah, Muhammad Rasulullah. La ilaha illallah.
Quran speaks about women.
The Quran teaches the equality of men and women in the eyes of Allah.
Chapter 33, verse 35.
All praise is due to the one and only. He is the master of all creation.
Modesty and chastity are encouraged by the Quran, both for women and for men.
Chapter 24, verses 30 and 31.
He is the sustainer and the maintainer of the whole universe.
God created us from one male and one female and made us into nations and tribes so that we make to know one another, not to despise each other.
Chapter 49, verse 13.
La ilaha illallah, Muhammadur Rasulullah, Muhammad is the messenger, so Allah is our return.
The Quran has indicated worthy women in history just as it has mentioned such men, and has commended them greatly.
Chapter 3, verse 37.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.